All told, such methods and materials used by NCI researchers could have easily created AIDS virus progenitors, including SIV, SIV-AGM, SIV-CPR, and HIV-2. Thus, the iatrogenic theory of HIV and HIV development is strongly supported. By the way, that's I-A-T-R-O-G-E-N-I-C. That word is a new one to me. Continuing. With the North American AIDS epidemic, besides the NCI and Litton Bionetics, the Merck Company and the NYUMC appear chiefly accountable. With the North American AIDS epidemic, besides the NCI and Litton Bionetics, the Merck Company and the New York University Medical Center appear chiefly accountable. It is reasonable to propose HIV-1, HIV-2, or other progenitors initially infecting Litton-supplied monkeys were accidentally transmitted to MSD or NYUMC experimental vaccines that were then tested on mentally retarded children, gay volunteers, and others in New York City as early as 1970. Though polio vaccines are also suspected of transmitting HIV-1 and other viruses, the unique epidemiology and concurrent outbreaks of AIDS in New York City and Central Africa appears to coincide more closely with the administration of experimental hepatitis B vaccines than with either the Salk or Sabin vaccines. The polio vaccine trials were conducted during the mid to late 1950s and early 1960s. Had HIV-1 been transmitted then, the outbreaks would have been more likely to have occurred during the late 1960s or early 1970s, that is, almost a decade before the onset of clinical cases and prior to when molecular genetics indicates HIV-1 evolved. However, the possibility that HIV-1 evolved in Willowbrook children and or gay men as a result of first polio and then hepatitis vaccine contamination cannot be ruled out. By the way, Willowbrook is an institution in New York for retarded children and appears to have been used either for experimentation or a tragic accident. Continuing, the first four lots of Merck's experimental hepatitis B vaccine may have been partially derived from the children and or the men's blood serum, which may have included live SV40, SFV, SIV-AGM, or other viruses, potential building blocks of HIV-1, transmitted to the human donors during polio vaccination a decade earlier. Thus, recombination of HIV-1 ancestors may have occurred in one or more of the hepatitis B serum donors. This, as an alternative to purposeful or chimpanzee-mediated contamination of the Merck vaccine, could have resulted in the transmission of AIDS as well. Another polio vaccine theory accepted by Dr. Howard B. Ernovitz, founder and chief science officer for Calypte, C-A-L-Y-P-T-E, biomedical company in Berkeley, California, is also noteworthy. Ernovitz concluded that HIV-1 may be a monkey-human hybrid, since a certain number of the polio vaccine recipients possibly maintained the HIV-1 envelope in their cells as a normal gene. This gene then could have recombined with any of the viruses likely to have contaminated the human vaccines in question to produce a monkey-human hybrid on the way to becoming HIV-1. Like Martin, Kyle, Schultz, Ellswood, and Stricker, Ernovitz called for careful PCR analyses of the experimental vaccine lots in question in order to prove or disprove these hypotheses, providing the lots allegedly in safekeeping at the FDA have not been altered or destroyed. By the way, in this context, I also recommend the remarkable book Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus by Ed Haslam. That's put out in softcover by the Wordsworth Press. You can have your bookstore order that from an 800 number. That is called one. That 800 number is 800 Monkey X. Once again, that 800 number from which you can order the Ed Haslam book, 800 Monkey X. Again, Wordsworth Publishers out of New Mexico, a very, very important book. Also, I did a 3-hour interview in half-hour segments with author Ed Haslam. That is available from Spitfire. I'll give the address at the end of the program. This next segment that I'm going to read here is entitled Plausible Denial and Self-Incrimination. Unless the U.S. Congress orders an independent investigation, thorough genetic analyses of the suspected hepatitis B and polio vaccine lots, and look-back studies of disease among their recipients, the origin of the AIDS mystery will likely remain unsolved. Given all the facts, however, there is one thing for certain. The speculation that AIDS jumped species naturally to initially infect people virtually simultaneously on two far-removed continents and more oddly, in the two exact regions wherein the suspected AIDS-like virus and vaccine experiments took place, must be seriously questioned. Moreover, based on the massive evidence compiled herein, scientists, including those at the NCI and CDC who advocated such far-fetched notions of the origin of AIDS, in contrast to their knowledge of the NCI's special virus cancer program and recombinant viral vaccine experiments, have obviously incriminated themselves. Such self-incrimination is additionally evident considering the same core group of research institutions and researchers falsely alleged. One, that HIV was widely distributed in Central Africa in the early 1970s and even long before. Two, that the Marburg agent was likewise found in monkeys throughout the world. Three, that Merck's hepatitis B vaccine was vindicated as the source of HIV transmissions. Four, that American researchers required the French to discover how to keep HIV-infected T-cells alive. Five, that key researchers, including Don Francis and Luc Montagnier, were unaware of Robert Gallo's AIDS-like virus experiments during the early 1970s. Six, that funding would not be withheld during the early 1980s to allow other researchers to investigate the virus suspected of causing AIDS. Seven, that the AIDS virus took several years to discover. Eight, that the discovery of HIV or HTLV-3-LAV took place during the 1980s simultaneously by Gallo and Montagnier. Nine, that the discovery of HIV-2 occurred virtually simultaneously by Essex and Montagnier. Ten, that the subsequent French-American AIDS fracases evolved so inexplicably. 11. That the Ebola viruses represented a serious natural threat to humans, despite evidence and expert testimony that it was man-made. And 12. That HIV-1 cannot be the cause of AIDS, as argued by Peter Duisberg. Finally, that virtually no attention was paid by any of the suspects to the iatrogenic theory of AIDS is additionally suspicious, if not criminal. And again, I'm going to read some more from the book, but if listeners have their interest piqued, I strongly recommend that they get a hold of the book. I'm going to give more information about how to get a hold of it later. Now, again, this book will be like old home week for veteran listeners to this particular program. There is extensive discussion of the Galen Organization, the Knights of Malta, and in particular the Project Paperclip scientists, the Nazi scientists, who were brought into the United States at the end of World War II to work in various defense industries. And indeed, the author has developed developed hard evidence of a continuity, an institutional continuity, between many of the institutions that utilized some of these Nazi scientists and some of the institutions that crop up in connection with the probable development of AIDS, Ebola, etc. This next segment that I'm going to read is entitled Nazis in the Navy and Viruses from the Sky. After a discussion of the Project Paperclip scientists brought into the United States, the author says, besides the involvement of Nazis in bacteriological weapons experiments conducted by the Air Force, General Bolling's JIOA imported several BW experts into the United States for the Navy as well. Eric Traub, E-R-I-C-H, capital T-R-A-U-B, for instance, quote, in charge of biological warfare for the Reich Research Institute on the secluded island of Rhin, where his biological warfare research specialty was viral and bacteriological diseases, unquote, and his assistant, Anna Burger, A-N-N-E-B-U-R-G-E-R, went to work for the Navy in 1951 under Project Paperclip. Assigned to the Naval Medical Research Institute Laboratory in Bethesda, their work, quote, included conducting experiments on animals to determine the lethal doses of more than 40 strains of highly infectious viruses, unquote. Within 10 years, the Navy's Biomedical Research Laboratory, or NBRL, along with Litton Bionetics, had become a chief supplier of, quote, cell cultures for cancer research studies to NCI investigators, unquote, throughout the world. By the early 1960s, the NBRL became closely associated with the University of California. That's, by the way, the Naval Biomedical Research Laboratory. By the early 1960s, the NBRL became closely associated with the University of California, where Peter Duisberg was working on NCI projects. Naval studies directed by Dr. Mark A. Chatigny, or Chatigny, C-H-A-T-I-G-N-Y, and, quote, Biohazards Control and Containment Segment, unquote, Chief Dr. Alfred Hellman, also associated with the Atomic Energy Commission, sought to identify the effects of, quote, viral aerosols, unquote, on animals and humans. Their principal NCI grant objective was to, quote, evaluate the effect of selected stress situations on induction of viral disease or cancerous trauma, and to evaluate the role airborne particle size might play in such interactions, unquote. At the same time, another Navy study was underway to determine, quote, the fundamental biology of tumor cells and the interaction between tumor cells and viruses, unquote, that cause cancer. This study, begun October 1, 1962, relied on the expertise of Dr. Walter Nelson Reese, that's N-E-L-S-O-N hyphen capital R-E-E-S, described by Strecker as the keeper of America's cell lines. The Navy University of California collaborative effort was officiated by the NCI's Solid Tumor Virus Segment Vice Chairman James T. Duff, the UFF, who along with Robert J. Huebner, H-U-E-B-N-E-R, the segment's chairman, worked closely with Duesberg on his studies to determine the structure and regulating mechanisms of cancer viruses. Following this decade of progress, a 1971 National Cancer Institute report shown in figure 18.2 summarized this study group's proposed course of action. Quote, continue to develop cell reagents as substratas for human carcinogenesis, attempt to isolate and characterize viral agents from human tumor cells, continue a reference laboratory of cells in culture, study oncogenic viral antigens during embryogenesis, development of the human embryo, and continue basic research in the biology of tumor viruses. Dr. Horowitz goes on to write, though by this time I had grown accustomed to shocking new evidence, I still balked on finding these documents linking Hitler's biological weapons chief to the National Cancer Institute's finest. The next segment of the book Emerging Viruses that I'm going to read concerns the involvement of Dr. Peter Duesberg. You've heard a couple of references to Dr. Duesberg. Dr. Duesberg maintains that HIV does not cause AIDS and that it's produced by the lifestyles of the people that have come down with it. I have been very skeptical about Peter Duesberg from the beginning, simply because the groups that are getting it, gays and blacks in Africa, have basically been doing what they've been doing for a long time, and they haven't gotten anything like AIDS. Beyond that, the implication that lifestyle has produced these diseases is sort of a scientific, or I believe pseudoscientific, rationalization, which is identical with the viewpoint of the extreme Christian right, that basically AIDS is the punishment visited by God on the sodomizers and the fornicators and the users of false drugs. Well, certainly the stronger one's immune system is and the fewer foreign invasive things one has in one's body, the stronger one's immune system will be. The fact of the matter is that gays have been doing what they've been doing for a long time. People in Africa have been doing what they've been doing for a long time. I've even heard Duesberg and Duesberg disciples suggest that people who smoke marijuana are going to get AIDS or have AIDS, and that's simply preposterous. And we should note, whatever the implication of this, that Peter Duesberg has been deeply involved with the milieu that is implicated in either the accidental or deliberate creation and or transmission of AIDS. And we should note that this milieu has evolved from and includes elements descending from Project Paperclip, the importation of Nazi scientists at the end of World War II, as we just read in the last segment. The last section that I'm going to read from this book, again, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, by Dr. Leonard Horowitz, a book that I'm going to be excerpting at considerable length for a long time to come. And again, I'm going to be interviewing the author on more than one occasion. This next segment concerns Dr. Peter Duesberg's work for the NCI and his association with people like Dr. Robert Gallo and his imputation of the lifestyles of people who have AIDS as being responsible for AIDS rather than HIV. Dr. Horowitz writes, in any case, Duesberg has argued for more than a decade that you can find HIV in any burned-out, drugged-out, and sexed-out individual. He has consistently, quote, blamed the victims, unquote, of AIDS for living unhealthy lives. His arguments are difficult to dispute since physicians and scientists have known for years that strong host resistance is a key factor in determining whether or not an infectious germ can take root, grow, and ultimately overwhelm the immune system. Moreover, he has claimed that HIV is very difficult to spread, which it is. With rare exception, it generally requires larger doses of viruses in more healthy individuals to claim lives. So nothing Duesberg has said is new. In fact, Duesberg's position is exactly that held by prominent NCI and NIH researchers from the beginning of the epidemic. As Schultz wrote, that's Randy Schultz, it is, quote, incredulous, unquote, that the National Cancer Institute in 1982 was still fiddling around with half-baked theories that GRID was caused by paupers or sperm. But those were the presentations the NIH researchers made at the conferences. None of them was talking about what Francis thought was the most obvious cause, a new viral agent, unquote. The fact is that Duesberg, like Gallo, Montagnier, Francis, Hilleman, and a few others, had been part of a core group of investigators funded by the NCI to study, quote, special, unquote, viruses and their links to cancer. In 1971, for instance, Duesberg became a, quote, project director, unquote, for the University of California's contract NIH 71-2173 to study the mechanisms regulating mutant RNA tumor virus reproduction and sarcoma development. The RNA-dependent DNA polymerase-related effects Gallo and his team studied. This work followed sarcoma and leukemia virus studies on monkeys and cows also conducted at the University of California with NCI funding. The same year, during a meeting in Paris attended by Gallo and Montagnier, Duesberg presented evidence that RNA leukemia and sarcoma viruses can be manipulated and observed to produce the, quote, provirus DNA, unquote, needed to successfully reproduce in nature and cell cultures. Earlier, Duesberg evaluated the effects of chemotherapy using the antibiotic actinomycin D on mouse leukemia viruses, or MLV. Later, he examined leukemia and sarcoma viruses to show how mutants of varying oncogenity are formed. Most pertinent to Duesberg's main argument, HTLV-3 does not cause the immune deficiency in cancers seen in AIDS. Duesberg and Gallo in 1973 debated essentially the same question. Can, quote, special, unquote, type cRNA tumor viruses, such as those captured from simian monkeys and modified for human experiments, cause cancers? Duesberg answered affirmatively, quote, that is absolutely right. This last paragraph, again, because it's really critical for those who want to develop an intelligent, critical evaluation of Duesberg's work. By the way, his book was, I believe, published by Regnery Publishers. That's an ultra-right-wing publisher. Right-wing publisher. Some of the stuff's ultra-right-wing, but it's a right-wing publisher. Most pertinent to Duesberg's main argument, HTLV-3 does not cause the immune deficiency and cancer seen in AIDS. Duesberg and Gallo in 1973 debated essentially the same question. Can, quote, special, unquote, type cRNA tumor viruses, such as those captured from simian monkeys and modified for human experiments, cause cancers? Duesberg answered affirmatively, quote, that is absolutely right, unquote. The discussion occurred following Gallo's presentation, quote, on the origin of human acute myeloblastic leukemia, the virus hotspot hypothesis, unquote. Gallo was joined by Dr. Wu, who presented two related papers as an emissary of Litton Bionetics. During the session's open discussion, Gallo questioned whether the genetic, quote, hotspot, unquote, that caused cells to become cancerous was responding to an internal or external virus-like particle. And I'm going to quote the exact debate here verbatim as presented by the author. Again, as was the case with the Dr. Nicholson paper, this is essentially Greek to me, but the author presents a summary and analysis of what is said here, and it's very important. Gallo, are there viral type C RNA tumor virus genes in some normal cells? Everyone by now must believe that there are some virogenes in at least some normal cells. I would like to know where they came from or which came first. Are these virogenes in fact really cell genes which the virus utilizes? Duesberg should speculate on this. Duesberg, that's too much for me. That's like all theories on the origin of life. Where do whales come from? Where does God come from? Where does a clean chicken come from? But I would like to return a question to you, maybe somewhat related to that. I think we can at least divide those viruses which cause cancer and those which are subvirus-like things which may be a consequence of cancer. I think that those which are causing cancer may be like the men and the other more or less like the boys. So I think that shouldn't be confused too much. I think these subviral particles or endogenous viruses or incomplete endogenous viruses or enzymes might in fact well be a consequence of cancer rather than its cause. But I think there is little doubt that RUS, R-O-U-S-S-V, mouse sarcoma virus, or AMV bird virus can be the cause of cancer, unquote. Gallo. I kind of agree with that, at least they cause chicken cancer. I think the information for carcinogenesis may be packaged into only very special type C RNA tumor viruses. But I wouldn't even make those viruses that you call boys any less important because boys can become men. Moreover, we have now demonstrated that the reverse transcriptase in human leukemic cells and the viral-related nucleic acid is related not to endogenous non-oncogenic type C viruses, but specifically to type C viruses which in fact are oncogenic, such as the woolly monkey simian sarcoma virus. Duisberg. That is absolutely right. And the author adds in parentheses, emphasis added. Now, Dr. Horowitz goes on to basically interpret this for the lay people, of whom I am most assuredly one. In essence, Gallo stated and Duisberg acknowledged that only, quote, very special, unquote, retroviruses could be expected to produce AIDS-like symptoms, as this had already been proven in monkeys and other animals. In contrast, since the publication of his objections to the HIV equal A equals AIDS paradigm in 1988, Duisberg has been diverting public attention from the facts by arguing that HIV has nothing to do with AIDS. AIDS-like viruses do cause immune system disorders and cancer, he admitted, at least in chickens and monkeys, before they were clearly modified to infect human cells. In light of Duisberg's documented ties to the NAS and NCI, at the exact time that the NAS informed the DOD that AIDS-like viruses could be developed in 5 years for $10 million, I wondered whether the professor intended to provide a disinformation smokescreen for these organizations. And I have no answer to the question provided by Dr. Horowitz here, but it certainly is interesting. Again, this last couple of segments. In essence, Gallo stated, and Duisberg acknowledged that only, quote, very special, unquote, retroviruses could be expected to produce AIDS-like symptoms, as this had already been proven in monkeys and other animals. In contrast, since the publication of his objections to the HIV equal AIDS paradigm in 1988, Duisberg has been diverting public attention from the facts by arguing that HIV has nothing to do with AIDS. AIDS-like viruses do cause immune system disorders and cancer, he admitted, at least in chickens and monkeys before they were clearly modified to infect human cells. In light of Duisberg's documented ties to the NAS and NCI, at the exact time that the NAS informed the DOD that AIDS-like viruses could be developed in 5 years for $10 million, I wondered whether the professor intended to provide a disinformation smokescreen for these organizations. DOD, of course, is the Department of Defense, i.e. the Pentagon. I would also note that some critics of Duisberg have speculated about the possibility of Duisberg and or his colleagues attempting to convince high-risk groups that there was nothing wrong, they should go ahead and not amend their behaviors, and that this would ultimately result in more AIDS. And again, I have no answer to that speculation. That line of speculation has been introduced, however, in at least one weekly magazine in Southern California. Now, the last item that I'm going to present as part of the prepared portion of this program is an excerpt of a letter from the author of this book, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, to Dr. Robert Gallo, the preeminent retrovirologist in this country. This is a letter from Dr. Horowitz to Dr. Gallo, dated August 2nd, 1996, and I'm just going to excerpt a small part of it in the interests of time. I'm going to quote Dr. Gallo's reply to a previous question that had been proposed by Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Horowitz writes, "In keeping with my agreement to send you in advance any quote I plan to use in forthcoming publications for you to verify its meaning or intent, I relay the following segment. Though many researchers, including Dr. Gallo, claim that the technology did not exist to create HIV at that time in one of their laboratories, and that the human AIDS virus could not have been developed by simply combining cat, chicken, cow, and monkey cancer viruses, they admit that the, quote, missing link, unquote, between the SIVs and the HIVs is perplexing. Skipping down after dissing the notion that some of those viruses could have been recombinant, he then basically goes on to backtrack. I might as well read the whole thing here, just in the interests of veracity. This again is part of Dr. Gallo's reply. Regarding the cat, chicken, monkey, or cow virus recombination theory, quote, "It's altogether an impossibility," unquote, Gallo defended, again quoting, "I would tell you if something like that went wrong. I can think of more rational and possible things that could have happened by accident at that period of time, but that's really the wrong tree," unquote. And then this is the really significant part here. It's not easy to follow the verbiage, but basically this is what Dr. Horowitz, this is why Dr. Horowitz wanted me to read this. And this, again, is from Dr. Robert Gallo, the preeminent AIDS researcher. "However, when I asked the world's most eminent retrovirologist, quote, so there's absolutely no possibility that these types of experiments, not necessarily in your lab, presented building blocks where hybrids were being created that might have given rise to the HIVs, Dr. Gallo replied, quote, no, I cannot say no to you. I don't say no to you. I said that we don't have any virus that we know of that has homology to HIV-1. To say this became HIV-1 except for the monkey virus SIV or the human virus HIV-2, which is exactly the same as the strain of SIV. We just don't have any virus that has those sequences in it," unquote. Gallo continued, quote, "Now if you then say to me, could it be an unidentified virus that mixed A with B with C? Then I would say, yeah, that's possible," unquote. And Horowitz then goes on to say, "Please let me know if this still accurately reflects your scientific knowledge and opinion, or if you would like to add or delete anything." Basically, it's not easy to follow, but what Dr. Gallo, again, the preeminent AIDS researcher, certainly the most famous AIDS researcher, is saying here, he is admitting the possibility of an accidental man-made creation of AIDS, or that AIDS might have been accidentally developed in a lab. Although this is certainly far short of the speculations and the evidence presented by many people, it is nonetheless, I think, very significant to have Dr. Gallo admit, and that's what he just did, of the possibility of AIDS being created by humans. It was not a naturally occurring virus, but a created virus, albeit, in this case, he's saying an accidentally created virus. And again, permission to read this was explicitly granted to me by Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Once again, we're running real low on time here. I want to repeat the information about where you can get, or where your bookstores can order and or stock the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, published in hardcover by Tetrahedron and authored by Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz. There's an 800 number that can be called, 800-336-9266. Once again, that's 800-336-9266. 9266. And there's also, you can have them write to P.O. Box 402, Rockport, Massachusetts, 01966. Also, Tetra, there's an email address, tetra@tetrahedron.org. There is a website, by the way, the email address again, tetra@tetrahedron.org. The website is http://www.tetrahedron.org. Tetrahedron again, T-E-T-R-A-H-E-D-R-O-N. That 800 number one last time, 800-336-9266. That concludes this hour excerpting of a One Step Beyond show from August 18th of 1996. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.